Well, it's Anzac Day tomorrow, and of course much will be said about the fact that our men and women in many theatres of war gave their lives so that we can be free. And they would have understood clearly what freedoms they were fighting for. Today it is valid to argue that many of those freedoms are under siege. Have these valiant Australians died in vain? It's a question you're not meant to ask. Janet Albrechtson, who writes splendidly, wrote recently that Western civilization itself is at risk. She wrote, "Today, hurt feelings and being offended are enough to limit fundamental freedoms, and a swathe of laws and bureaucracies are committed to those same repressive ends." She said, "It doesn't matter that the intentions behind these laws were once good, it's enough that the outcomes are now rotten." She said, "We live in an age of hyper-reactions by givers and takers of offence. At Starbucks in the United States, a couple of employees in an organisation of 175,000 workers made a mistake, and now 8,000 stores will be closed while all employees are sent to racial bias training." As she said, a basic sense of proportion has been lost. She makes the point that today words are being struck off as unacceptable by workplace language police. And she makes the point that it's worth asking whether the ideas of the Enlightenment are at risk of being forgotten. She says, asks, "Is Western civilization headed down a path of unenlightenment? Will it be too late before more of us understand what is being sacrificed on the altars of politically correct fashion and self-loathing?" She cites a Lowy Institute poll telling us that only 52% of Australians aged between 18 and 29 believe democracy is the preferable form of government. And polls in the United States suggesting that 50% of American millennials, those people reaching adulthood since the year 2000, say they wish they lived in a socialist country rather than a capitalist one, 50%. In Britain, 24% of 18 to 24-year-olds say big business is more dangerous to the world than communism. And Janet writes, and here's the rub, 71% of millennials can't define communism. 4/5 don't know how many people died under communist rule. Don't teach that in the classroom, of course. It'll be run counter to the left-wing rubbish that's pumped out. And as she said, if the younger generation haven't lived it or learnt about the horrible consequences of repressing freedom, how can they value the freedom they have? This brings us to another point that Janet Albrechtson has made, albeit tangentially. While all sorts of legal action, like complaints to the Human Rights Commission, have occurred over allegedly offensive free speech, no action has been taken in relation to genuine hate speech designed to incite violence. And this is where the issue is muddied about the difference between free speech and hate speech. Now, let's put this aside for a moment as differentiating between what is hate speech and free speech. Now, if you take them both, governments are spineless in supporting free speech and gutless in prosecuting hate speech. General Albrechtson has referred specifically to anti-Semitic and anti-gay posters found outside schools in Melbourne and Queensland. She makes the point that these posters are the work of a neo-Nazi outfit called Antipodean Resistance, which has a website. And she further makes the point that the New South Wales government has refused to take steps to prosecute these neo-Nazis for inciting violence, despite 1989 state anti-discrimination legislation, which makes it an offence to incite violence on the basis of race or sexuality. So, as I said, we don't defend free speech, and we don't prosecute hate speech. What kind of world are we living in? And why did our men and women die? Janet's on the line. Janet, good morning.
Good morning, Alan.
Plenty of confusion, isn't there, between free speech and hate speech?
There certainly is, Alan. I guess I don't like the phrase hate speech because the way that that's grabbed by so many people who don't defend free speech, they use hate speech in a really ambiguous way. So I think it's much better just to talk about words that incite violence.
Right.
There are plenty of examples right across New South Wales, up in Queensland. This is growing. These posters that we are seeing, we're seeing them more and more right across Australia. And can I give you an example of just a couple of them, Alan?
Please.
So people understand what these are. One poster says, "Legalise the execution of Jews." At the top of it, it says, join your local Nazis. Now, that is inciting violence. Another poster says, join your fellow faggots. And it has a picture of a silhouette of a picture of a man shooting himself in the head. And it talks about the high suicide rates among gays. It's inciting gays to kill themselves. Another one says, get the sodomite filth off the streets. It has a picture of a gun pointed at the head of a man wearing a gay and proud T-shirt. These are words that incite violence, and yet the New South Wales government has done nothing, even though it's promised on so many occasions to do something.
And there's been legislation on the statute book since 1989.
And they know that legislation doesn't work, because if it did work, it would be used on so many occasions to actually shut down words that incite violence. This is not about hurt feelings. This is not about, you know, insulting someone who's got an ego that's easily insulted.
And Janet, to interrupt you there, the illustrations you've given, Janet's not talking about something stuck on a tree 15 miles from Caboolture. I mean, this was outside Maroochydore High School in Queensland earlier this year. Legalise the execution of Jews, join your local Nazis. On the walls at Melbourne Grammar School and Melbourne High School in August last year. Stickers imploring white Australian youth to join the fight were at Gordon train stations in Sydney. And that poster, join your fellow faggots, 16% of sodomites have attempted suicide, up to 50% of trans people have attempted suicide. That was at the University of Tasmania. I mean, these are prominent positions in the community.
Yes, and more of them over the last 18 months. And the police want to act. The New South Wales government have told me there is a gap in the law. They know that. And yet when this went to Cabinet last November, every single Conservative in that Cabinet voted the incitement to violence reform down. And you know why they did that, Alan? They were worried about it becoming an 18C issue. An 18C issue. 18C is about hurt feelings. It's under the federal law. It's about someone drawing a cartoon that offends someone's feelings. You know, this is absolute nonsense. 18C is a nonsense, and yet they are trying to say to us, the voters of New South Wales, it's an 18C issue. Well, they're treating us like absolute idiots. They're the idiots if they don't know the difference between words that hurt someone's feelings and words that incite someone to cause violence to another person.
A large swastika saying, reject Jewish poison, glued to the window of Federal Labor MP Mike Kelly's electorate office in March this year in the federal seat of Eden Monaro. Kelly's wife is Jewish. No prosecution.
No. And remember, you know, a couple of years ago, there were two teenage boys who were arrested outside an Islamic prayer room.
Yep.
This was in Bankstown.
Yep.
A couple of years before that, one of those boys, when he was 14, he was in that protest in Sydney's Hyde Park. He was wearing a T-shirt that said, behead all those who insult the prophet. That is a T-shirt that incites violence. You know, let's be clear, insulting the prophet, that's a free speech issue. But telling someone to behead someone who insults the prophet, that is about safety. That's about the safety of people who live in New South Wales.
In the middle of Hyde Park.
In the middle of Hyde Park, Alan. And, you know, we can have lots of debates about what free speech is. I had assumed that we were intelligent enough and concerned enough about our freedom to exist that we understood that we drew the line at words that incite violence.
But in 2015, as you've cited, during a sermon at a mosque in Lakemba, this Ismail al-Wawa, the extremist imam, but he's head of Hizb ut-Tahrir in Australia, called for jihad against Jews. No prosecution.
No prosecution, no.
Described Jews as a cancerous tumour. It must be uprooted and thrown back to where it came from. No prosecution.
We're not defending ourselves anymore, are we?
No.
We had thousands and thousands of young men go off to war to defend our freedoms. And what are we doing in the midst of our luxurious, you know, existence in 2018? We can't even defend ourselves against people on the streets who are inciting violence. The government can't get off its backside to do it. The police want to do it, to do the right thing. And yet we have a Liberal government that cannot discern the difference between free speech, which they can't defend, and words that incite violence.
Which they won't prosecute.
They won't protect her from.
Which they won't prosecute. And yet, repeating what you said, November 20 last year, the New South Wales Cabinet knocked back an attempt by a new Attorney General, Mark Speakman. I understand he was supported by Gladys Berejiklian, who were determined to bring in effective incitement laws. But as Janet has said, Conservative members of the Cabinet, Dominic Perrottet, David Elliott, Anthony Roberts, they opposed it. I mean, what are these people on about? They can't understand the difference between free speech and speech which incites violence.
I you know, it leaves me speechless, Alan, that we have reached this position where a Liberal government can't discern that difference. They can't go out and defend free speech.
Yep. And they can't prosecute speech which incites violence. Now, you take a poster which says, "Get the sodomite filth off our streets." Well, someone's got to say, who wrote that? And they'd be prosecuted. Legalise the execution of Jews. Jihad against Jews. This is incitement to violence, and it threatens the safety of Australians. What protection do Australians have against these people? None. There's not been a single prosecution. That's your point.
Not one since 1989. That's a long time. And it just beggars belief that we can't learn from history, that the increased existence of these kind of posters, they're not just anti-Semitic, they incite violence. They are being put at schools, as you said, at universities. These are young people who can't, you know, who are more scared by big business than they are by communism. You know, this is really important that we educate the young people at schools and universities about the dangers of Nazis, communism, socialism, all of these great isms that caused so much grief to the to the world over so many generations.
But I remember people ringing the program here, and we were in meltdown. This was way back in 2012, I think it was, and then 2016, where you mentioned those two teenage boys who were arrested outside an Islamic prayer room in Bankstown, which, for our listeners across Australia, southwest Sydney, for planning a terrorist attack. But one of the boys, that was in 2016. You see, this is the broken windows theory that was introduced into New York years and years ago. If you don't prosecute the kid who breaks the window, next week he might be stealing the car. Next week he might be murdering someone. The broken windows theory says tackle the thing at its source. Now, here were two teenage kids found arrested for planning a terrorist attack, but one of them, when he was 14 in 2012, was in Hyde Park wearing a T-shirt that said, "Behead all those who insult the prophet. Behead all those." And we said on this program, what the hell is happening? Janet, answer, nothing.
Nothing. And if the parents don't do the right thing in relation to that 14-year-old boy, it's up to us. It's up to the police to do the right thing. And nothing happened. So 2 years later, he was arrested for planning a terrorist attack. That's where this leads.
That's it. That's the broken windows. If you don't take it at its source, it'll lead to something worse. Now, Luke Foley in New South Wales has promised, has he not, to enact hate speech laws within 100 days of being elected.
Yes, except what is happening, Alan, is that basically the Gladys Berejiklian government has handed to Luke Foley this on a platter. So he will look strong on this. But, of course, we know what Labor does here. They go further than dealing with words that incite violence. They don't particularly defend free speech at all. They're even worse than the Liberals.
Yeah, that's
it. So what's going to happen?
So we've got laws on the statute book. We've got laws on the statute book that limit free speech, and we've got laws on the statute book that should prosecute speech which incites violence. No one on the one hand protects free speech, and on the other hand, they don't prosecute those who, in fact, incite violence against other Australians.
I don't know what's worse, Alan, the fact that we had a bunch of bureaucrats going after Bill Leake and three QUT students, or we've got this inept government in New South Wales that refuses to do anything on words that incite violence.
Absolutely.
Both are pretty rotten.
And we're on the eve of Anzac Day. How many of our soldiers would be rolling in their graves because of
Shame
the kind of society?
Shame on us, Alan.
Absolutely. You're a great lady. Good on you, Janet. Thank you for sharing that with us. She's a lovely woman. But there we are. Where are we? You can't say it often enough, can you? So out there, just imagine. Get the sodomite filth off the streets. No prosecution. Legalise the execution of Jews. No prosecutions. Jihad against Jews. The head of Hizb ut-Tahrir. Deport him. Jihad against Jews. Incitement to physical violence. Threats to the safety of Australians. No prosecution. But free speech. Oh, yes. Oh, we can go after Israel Folau any number of times, can't we? Anzac Day tomorrow. What have we done to dishonour the sacrifices those men and women made?